Fine. So yesterday we dealt with the Sugya on Chavchedom and Bet of Machar Shlo Bafanav and the comparison to Shor Muad and Ha'ada'a, the process of making an animal into a Shor Muad, where Ezra yells at Yaakov and tells him, Yaakov, you have a wild... There you go, just like that, the wild, boring thing. Right, we compared that to Andrew challenging Rami. Please challenge Rami, Andrew. Challenge Rami. We need you to... challenge you. Get off my field, you thief. Okay, good. Fine. Oh, very good. Rami is fully in character there. So the Gemara says, if you compare them, so then Machasha Lofanav should not be Macha'a. And we dealt with the question yesterday of why you would compare Macha'a of all things to Ha'ada'a. When at first glance, Ha'ada'a is status creating, and Macha'a is status destroying, undermining. So you had the Balamor following basically Rabbeinu Yonah's thing, which says, look, Chazakah is created because of the lack of Macha'a. So Macha'a, in the end of the day, is part of the status creating side of the equation, and that's why it's what's compared to it. Tosos, the Yitzhar, seems to say, no, Inachanami, Macha'a is status undermining. Again, is that evidentiary undermining or Muchzakut undermining? Both of them might be true. Doesn't matter for our purposes, but it's undermining. They both assume that the reason you compare them is more practical, because Hada'a and Macha'a are similarly going to or not going to be heard by the relevant parties. Tosfot and the Etcher divided on why that is. Is Chazaka more in your face or less in your face than Macha'a? And then we started looking at it and said, maybe instead of saying, how well will people find out about it, the question is more, what are these things? Where because Macha'a is confrontational, right, that's why it might need to entail a confrontation, as opposed to Chazaka, which is not by its very nature confrontational. That might be why it's different. So that brings us to the primary sugya of Macha'a on Lamed Chet. So the Mishnah tells us, Shalosh Aratot Lechazaka. There are three different lands in Israel, right, as Rashbam clarifies, with regards to Chazaka. Yehuda, the Eiver HaYarden, the HaGalil. Okay? Where is Yehuda? What part of Israel is Yehuda? Not even close. The southern part, thank you. Yerushalayim and self, like where I live, is Chelkat Yehuda, right? It, right? Yehuda, part of Yerushalayim, right? Yerushalayim is split, Yehuda Binyamin, right? And then underneath, where modern day, like Gush Etzion, right? So where I live, Hare Yehuda, that's what it's called. Hare Yehuda. This area here, who does it belong to? What? Thank you. How do you know? Because the huge signs that say Binyamin everywhere when you go around this area. Binyamin, very good. Binyamin is here, central. But Yehuda is Yerushalayim and south. And yeah, the negative and things like that. The Galil is north, and Eiver HaYarden is obviously the Transjordan, by which I mean the eastern bank of the Jordan River, or modern-day Jordan, more or less. Fine. What does it mean there are three lands? So the Mishnah clarifies, Haya b'Yehuda v'Hechzeg v'Galil. If the owner of the land, so Andrew comes to my house for Shabbos, so he is now located in Yehuda. He is Bahare Yehuda. Rami goes and squats on his, thank you, squats on his kiwi farm in the Galil. And this goes on for 3 years, right? For some reason, Andrew gets stranded at my house for 3 years. Okay? Right. Snow, corona, whatever. What? Who knows? Right? What? I don't know what I would do with you. I don't have a basement, but basements are not a given when you live in the mountains. Right? Like, you have to be very, it's a lot of work to make a basement, right? You have to go through a lot of rock. So, there are places where there are basements in that front, but most of them are really above ground, right? Just your bottom floor. Really getting underneath is not, lo que se call. So, Eina Chazak, Obegalil, it does not count. Ad sheyehe imo b'medina achat. Until Rami and Andrew are in the same place, and Andrew can potentially see Rami squatting on his land. Now, just from the Mishnah, tell me, why is it important that Rami and Andrew be in the same land? If you just had the Mishnah, what would you say?
Okay, so, the Mishnah recognizes that this is a thing, and we not all that bad, and it might be that the amount of time it takes for information.
Which information? Come on, Rami. You're dancing around the question. Yes, of course. Geography matters because it takes time for information to move. Very good. Which information is primary here? Okay, good. So Rami says that from the Mishnah, we don't know. Right? From the Mishnah, the relevant information could be that the information that Rami was squatting didn't get to Andrew, or it could be that the information that Andrew challenged Rami didn't get back to Rami, or both. Right? From the Mishnah, we don't know. Right? I mean, from the Mishnah, we don't know whether the problem is that, A, chazaka is only effective if it's in such a way that it might have elicited a challenge, but since no one will ever find out about it, that's not very courageous, Rami, for Rami to hang out on land when he knows that no one will ever say anything, right? Rami's like, I called him not courageous. Yeah, okay, fine. Or is it the fact that or is the focus going to be on the challenge, meaning that in the end of the day, what gives it the authority, right, following Rabbi Yonah, the Balamor, that Macha creates the Chazaka, if Macha won't happen, because Andrew won't find out about it, so then that can't create a Chazaka, because there was no, either it's a lack in the Chazaka itself, or it's a lack in the Macha, which creates the Chazaka, right? Or, yet another possibility is, remember the Chezkat Gimel Shanim that we talked about, that part of it is because of the shtar, right, which we didn't talk about too much yesterday, but the fact that Rami is supposed to keep his shtar for only 3 years, it could be that if Rami knows that he's in a land where nobody's ever going to find out about it, so he knows it might take more time for a challenge to register, and therefore he should take that into account and realize that the court is going to grant Andrew the right to challenge the land for longer, and therefore he should be holding on to his shtar. Right? Meaning from the Mishnah, you don't know what it is. You don't know if it's a lack in the chazaka, if it's a lack in the macha'a, if the fact that there's not going to be macha'a means that Rami should hold on to his shtar for longer. Right? In the Mishnah, you don't know. It's definitely by the speed of information. The question is, which information is relevant practically, and which information is relevant conceptually, right? Those questions, right? We see how in the Mishnah, pretty much all of that is in play, right? Rami's right. The only thing we know from the Mishnah is that there's certain key information that is not getting where it needs to get, But it doesn't tell you what that information is. I mean, it's true that the Mishnah highlights the chazaka component, but of course, if you wanted to play with it and say, by chazaka, it means the chazaka which is generated from the presumed silent when there's a lack of macha'a, and if there's no reason for Andrew to have heard and therefore been mocha, so then the chazaka won't be created, right? If you want to do that, you could read that into the Mishnah. So, yes, Rami is 100% right. The only thing we know from the Mishnah is that there was some sort of lack of information that traveled, either about the chazaka or about the macha'a, and somehow that prevents the chazaka, right? That's all we know. The Mishnah doesn't tell us more than that, at least in the position of the Tanakhama. Then the Mishnah introduces Rabbi Yehuda. Amar Rabbi Yehuda lo amru shaloshanim ela kidei shehei baspamya v'yachzik shana v'yelecho v'yodiyu shana v'yavo l'shana acheret. Rabbi Yehuda says that's not what the 3 years are for exactly. Now, Rashbam claims, right, so what does he say? Right, so Rashbam says lachlokba. He's coming to argue with Lomar. Rabbi Yehuda says, doesn't matter how far you are. If you're within a year travel distance, it is a chazaka. Why? You need 3 years, so that what? Rami needs to dwell on it for a year because he has to have a significant chazaka. The information needs to travel for a year and get back in a year. Right? So 3 years for the information to get back to Rami. By the way, remember at the beginning when I said, when we all of them did chazaka, we said, is it really that you need 3 years, or maybe the muhzakut is created in less time, but you need to wait out the 3 years for some ancillary reason? Rabbi Yehuda thinks exactly that, right? He thinks, listen to his language. Chazaka is created in a year, right? It's just that it can't be finalized until Andrew has had a chance to weigh in. But it sounds like for him, whatever the chazaka is, that status that's granted to Rami isn't really granted after 3 years. It's granted after 1 year. You need to wait it out 2 extra years to give it time for the potential legal challenges to play themselves out, right? But you see, according to Yehuda, Andrew, right, 3 years isn't really three. It's really 1 year to create the status of a chazaka. What? So I don't know if it's specifically 1 year. Does it mean a day? Does it mean, right? It doesn't make it clear, but he, right, meaning he says a year, but it's clear that for him, three isn't really what chazaka is about. Chazaka is created in less, but like we hold it, its effect in abeyance until the challenge or potential challenges fleshes itself out, right? Which means that when we talked about, is it really three or is it really one plus two or a day plus 3 years or, right, whatever, right, Rabbi Yehuda seems to be going in that direction, that the whatever the chazaka is created in less, you just need to deal with the side problems of macha'a. There is. But he says 3 years is a year of chazaka, a year for the information to travel and for it to get back. Right? And therefore he says it's not about Yehuda, Galil, doesn't matter, because even in Aspamya, even if it's a year travel, so if Rami lives there for a year and then the information travels to Andrew, where do you live now that is a year away? I mean, in modern world, nowhere, but in the ancient world, Andrew has moved to, Andrew has decided he's a Lord of the Rings aficionado and has decided to move to New Zealand so that he can constantly see where they filmed this is like one of my goals in life one day, to go to New Zealand. Just because, like, when you watch the movies, you're like, wow, it's beautiful there. The only thing that scares me is, like, flying. Yeah, it's just, I mean, right now they're like, you know, shut down corona-wise, they've been whatever. And also, like, the notion of that type of flight terrifies me. It's so far. So New Zealand is from Australia, like from Melbourne, is another 5-hour flight past that. Yeah. So like, however many hours it takes to get to Australia, which from here is 2 flights, right? So like, if you think about it, from New York, right? So the way my friends who are from Australia would usually fly is first they'd fly to California, right? It's 5 hours to California, and then it's another, I think, 17 hours to Australia or something. So the alternative, you can either fly that way, or you can fly to Hong Kong, I think, and then fly from there, right? I think from Israel, that's how people normally fly, is through Hong Kong. So I think it's like, from here, maybe it's like two flights. It's very long. And then, right, the Hong Kong, and then maybe to Singapore, I don't remember. And then to Australia, and then to New Zealand is yet another 5-hour flight. Meaning, I never realized that, you know, until recently, that New Zealand is as far from, like, Australia as L.A. is from New York, you know. Yeah, it's 5-hour flight. It's like half the distance from here to New York, right? Like, if you think about it, right, New York to L.A. is the same as New York to London, right? Right, just in the opposite direction. Right? So that same distance is Australia to New Zealand. So it's not close. It's like, go to the end of the earth and then fly 5 hours past the end of the earth. What? They do not have similar accents. I mean, they do not. No. No, the Aussie accent is not the same as New Zealand. Having had friends who are both from Australia and from, you know the way like people in London don't have the same accent as Manchester, right? Because yeah, so it's like that. Like, Australia is high... I mean, yes, people in London will tell you that Australian accents are, like, low-class, just like our accents are America, but New Zealand is like, you know... Oh, your hair, my dread, you know. Fine. I mean, whatever. Yeah, I had one friend from... a few friends from New Zealand. New Zealand is really... it's far. So in the meantime, Andrew is in New Zealand. That was the point here. And, you know, before you had planes, with planes, it takes a long time to get to New Zealand. So, now, if you look at the Rashbam, continuing the Rashbam, he says that, look at 4 lines in the Rashbam, at the bottom of the Rashbam, he says, the time of the Yehuda, lo mishum ditlachnin mizar inish bishtarei. He says, let's be clear. Rabbi Yehuda's challenge tells you that he doesn't buy the 3 years is how long someone holds on to his shtar. Time of the chazaka lididad lo shavik inish the achlul arab lo rishut afilu sha'achas. So, Andrew's question. Rashbam tells you, when we say a year, we don't mean a year. We mean a moment. According to the Rabbi Yehuda, really, chazaka is created in a moment. The minute that Rami starts squatting, chazaka is created because no one would let you do that. Why do you need 3 years? Because you need to allow the impact of that original momentary squatting on the land to play itself out. Because the information needs to get to Andrew, and Andrew needs to register his complaint, and then you need to go through the legal processes, right, etc. We let it 3 years because Andrew needs to find out about it. Okay. So, with this in mind, then the Gemara already immediately jumps. Even though we said in the Mishnah, you could have said that the relevant factor here was chazaka, the Gemara makes it very clear that it's not. This machlokes is not, right? This is the amazing thing, is the Mishnah says there are 3 are so lichazaka, and the Gemara immediately says that what's the machloket? About macha'a, right? So when you wonder where would Rabbeinu Yonah or where would the Balamor get the idea that chazaka doesn't independently create a status, but what creates the status of chazaka is really the fact that there was no macha'a, and macha'a is, and the lack thereof is the chazaka creator, there's a good reason that they believe that. Because at least in this Gemara, it really does sound that way. Because the Mishnah calls it Chazaka, and the Gemara says, ah, the Machloket is about Macha'a. Right? You have to be very careful, because the Gemara made a huge assumption there, right? You could have said no, right? Remember, if you had taken our conceptual model that Chazaka is gets its force because of Muchzakut, the longer you stay on the land, the more you slowly but surely become its de facto owner, why would you jump to Macha'a? You should just say, after 3 years, you, like Sharmuad, you've created a status. But at least in this Gemara, that's a bit of a hard read. You could defend it by saying Chazaka and Mecha'a. It means both, or, you know, both things are happening at the same time, or whatever. But it's definitely, it sounds like in our Gemara that Mecha'a is much more central to Chazaka than you might have thought in the Shormuad paradigm, right? In the Muchzakut paradigm, right? And it sounds more like Rabbeinu Yonah's, No, it's an evidentiary paradigm which is created from the silence. And it's really the silence, the lack of macha, that itself generates the chazaka, and therefore saying there's three lands for chazaka is the equivalent of saying something about macha. Right? So this Gemara really does give a lot of support to that conceptualization, that chazaka is an evidentiary paradigm created by silence. And macha is therefore front and center in chazaka. You can try to get out of it. But there's a good reason when you're reading this Gemara why you might end up, just like the Balamor does, and the Rabbeinu Yonah does, in exactly that paradigm. So the Gemara therefore says, my kisavar tanakama, what did he hold? I kisavar mecha'a shelo bifanav havia macha'a. Afil Yehuda v'galil nami. He says, I don't understand. If you hold that whether or not Andrew protests in front of Rami, we register it legally. Now, at this point, does the Gemara say why? At this stage in the Gemara, does the Gemara say why Macha Shalom B'Fanav should work? Andrew. At this stage in the Gemara, does the Gemara say why Macha Shalom B'Fanav should work? Does it say anything explicitly? No, right? Meaning later on, the Rashbam already drags in the Gemara from later on, which is, maybe Macha Shalom B'Fanav works because Chavrech L'Chavrech Chavrech Izlay. Because gossip. Right? So, but at this stage in the Gemara, you don't know that yet. Because if I asked you in a vacuum, why do you think Macha should work not in front? If you wanted to justify the position that Macha works even without the squatter there, right, why would you say that? If I just asked you, what would that tell you about Macha? If the owner makes his protest, the previous owner makes his protest without the squatter present, so the Gemara at this point is entertaining the notion that wants to entertain the possibility that it works. Macha Shalom B'Fanav works. What? Good. So Andrew is already convinced of the later Gemara, like the Rashbam, which is, aha, it is a given that Macha must reach the ears of Rami, of the squatter, but we're willing to rely on the rumor mill, right, to get things. Yeah, yeah. So one possibility is to say that, look, Micha'a really is about challenging Rami, about challenging the squatter. But, and no one denies that. The only question is whether you have to do it to their face or you're allowed to rely on word of mouth to get it back to Rami. If you didn't know that that was going to come up later on in the Gemara, what else might you have said? Why else might Macha'a Shalom B'Fanav work? Ezra, right? If you didn't know that the Gemara was going to say that part of the reason Macha'a Shalom B'Fanav works is because the information will eventually get to Rami through rumors, why might you have thought that Andrew can challenge Rami without Rami being there? So I want you to see how what's going to emerge later on the Gemara you really could have predicted from this stage. Oh, leave Shormuad aside. Oh, okay, fine. maybe you would have said it's exeris because of a short muad. Fine, okay. If you're still in that paradigm, fine. See, you guys already sold on the notion that Rami needs to find out about it, because you already sold on the notion that Macha is there to make sure that Rami holds on to his shtar, or it's to make sure that Rami, whatever. But you could have just said it very differently. You could have said, as the Gemara is going to say later, no, what do you mean? Andrew doesn't do this for Rami's sake. He does it for the court's sake. Right? It has nothing to do with Rami. Andrew has to register his complaint so that the court knows that he complained, so they don't have a counterclaim to Andrew, which is, why didn't you challenge him? Doesn't that prove you sold it? But therefore, as long as he can register his proof and show it to the court and say, on such and such a date, I registered my criticism, you might have said, why does that have to be with fun of? The point of Macha isn't to get Rami to worry about his shtar or whatever. It's to make sure that the court knows you were in silence. Right? Right? So at this stage of the Gemara, when the Gemara says, maybe the Tanakhama hold Macha, right? Macha shall be fun of. It could be because, like the Rashbam says, you assume Rami will hear about it, or it's because we assume it doesn't matter whether Rami hears it, it's for the court's benefit. Right? It's to make sure that everybody knows that Andrew wasn't silent, so it doesn't create the psychological assumption that, well, if it was yours, why were you silent? The answer is, I wasn't silent. I didn't say anything to Rami, but I wasn't silent. I went to the local court, I registered my complaint, and I enjoyed my vacation in New Zealand for the next 5 years, knowing that I had a document from the court that said, on such and such a date, I registered my complaint. Right? So when I get home, I'll kick him off. Let him enjoy it, because I just don't have the patience. I want to enjoy my 5 years of solitude in New Zealand. And, you know, what? Yes, exactly. Andrew the Hobbit. Very good. Very good. Why not? Once we're going to New Zealand for Lord of the Rings, might as well take its logical extreme that he's you're living out your life in a hobbit hole. Okay, why not? Yeah, it really looks so beautiful there. It really does. I'm sure they do. I'm sure there's. I don't know. My parents like went to New Zealand as part of their honeymoon. They talked about it as a kid how nice it was there. It was like. Yeah, I just can't. I mean, look, I can't imagine going with my kids. There's no way I'm putting five kids on a flight and like. It would take me like a month to recover from that flight, with you know. Yeah. I had one friend. It's like one of my friends. He's like, whenever he does that flight, he needs to go first class. He's like, you can't do that flight in regular. Like you need to be able to spread your legs. You know, you can't just be like squashed in a little chair like that for endless flights. Yeah, I can't do it. Yeah, for my brother and sister-in-law's wedding. So my brother-in-law's brother is a rabbi in Melbourne, and he flew back and forth like twice in 1 week, or like from Australia. I'm like, it literally took it took like 36 hours each way. I'm like, you can't like go for a week and like do that twice. It's insane. But he had like something he had to be at there and here and back and forth, you know. What? Oh yeah, flying is definitely gonna take a hit, you know. Right. Meaning, yeah. Like a lot of like business meetings where people would like fly for like a 3-hour meeting and like you ended up spending that much time in travel. That's not happening, right? Yeah, exactly. Vacation eventually will pick up again, and people will just want to see the world. But certain business trips, yeah, will definitely 100%. There are definitely some benefits to Zoom, like, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that a certain amount of like Zoom teaching will continue, even though it's much more enjoyable to see people in person and be able to, it's more relaxed. But still, like, it's well. There's not. Snow days are over. You have seen the death of snow days. Yeah, no, it will be the death of snow days. There will be, snow days will just be Zoom days. I agree with you, but this is, you know, yeah, it's like in Efrat today, we finally went under the number so we could theoretically open the schools, and everyone's like, oh yeah, you could open the school so that we could have, open the school and then have 2 days, two snow days, because, you know, in Israel, when it does snow, you get a snow day. There's no way they're, you know, they panic. Look, if we get a foot of snow, we're getting a snow day, you know. Yeah, though when we had that 3.5 feet of snow when I was in the Kollel, we did not have a snow. There was no electricity, and there was like 3.5 feet of snow. And Rav Moshe comes into the Beis Medrash, and he says, he gives a whole schmooze about how he's a Kalter Litvak, and what else do you think the world should be about if Hillel could be on top of the roof covered in snow, so we will be good litvaks and we will be in the Beis Medrash cold with our coats on? Where else can you go? There's nowhere to go because there's so much snow. Where else should you be but in the Beit Midrash? Where were you going to go? Oh. Pashut, we did that. That's not the... Gersh has a long-standing minhag of the first snowstorm of a football game in the snow. This is like... Also, we have these hysterical, these wonderful, you know, snowball fights. Where, like, one year, it was the most unfair snowball fight in the world. Because if you've ever been to Gersh, like, outside of Inradosh, is like a porch, right? Merpeset? Whatever, it's a merpeset, so you're a floor up, right? So one year, this is totally unfair. But I don't know how this happened, but it ended up being the New Yorkers were up on the Merpeset, and the Australians and Floridians were down. So first of all, we had the high ground. Second of all, they have no idea what to do with snow at all, right? So like, I mean, it was like a bloodbath. But like, yeah, that was fun. Yeah. It was fun. No, I remember I walked outside and suddenly like a massive snowball like hit my head. Turned around, it was Ray Carrigan. Like, you know. Anyways. No, Gush does have a very good campus for snowball fights. You know, so but you did that during break and after night sitter. Like 11 o'clock at night. Good times. Yeah, look, I'm hoping we get some snow. It'll give my, I feel bad, like my kids have been on Zoom school and whatever for like weeks. If I can give them a snowball fight, you know, it's like it's a Madrega, you know. I mean, whatever, I don't really have a shovel, so that'll be a problem. It's very hard to find snow shovels in this country. It's one of those things that people tell you you're supposed to bring on your Lyft from America, because you need, if you want a proper snow shovel, you know, I remember this after the 3.5 feet of snow, like you were going around. So like a few Americans had like snow shovels. Some people had like gardening shovels, but I saw someone using a broom and a sponge. I'm like, that is not going to work. It is 3.5 feet of snow. You have no idea what you're doing, right? You can't sweep it away. That's not possible. Yeah, fine. So the Gemara says, the Gemara then continues. So, ikisavar mecha'a shlo b'fanav, havye mecha'a. If you think that for whatever reason, mecha'a, even not in front of Rami, in front of the squatter, works, afilu Yehuda v'galil. So then, what? Then it should work even if you're in different parts of the country. I mean, once you say mecha'a shlo b'fanav, works, so then it should work no matter where you are. Now, of course, you could have distinguished, and you could have said, look, if you think Mecha'a Shlo B'Fanav doesn't work because it's just important for Andrew to register with the court, then it doesn't matter where you are. But if you think it works because we rely on rumors, so maybe there's a limit to how far rumors reach, right? So at this stage in the Gemara, you don't know, right? You could have said that this is part of what's going on, is why does it work? How much shol b'fanav can it be? And he says, and if you think that mecha has to be to your face, either because we don't rely on rumors, or because, as we talked about, it's confrontational by definition, that what gives mecha its force is that Andrew had the chutzpah to get up and tell Rami, you thief. But if he's not willing to say it to his face, maybe he's lying. Maybe Andrew's lying, right? Or whatever you want to say. So then, afilu v'yehuda namilo. Right? So then, Andrew should have to protest to Rami's face and not be able to do the macha even next door to him. He should have to do it to his face. It doesn't matter whether you're both in Yehuda. When would it ever make a difference that whether or not there's an effective chazaka hangs on whether Rami and Andrew are living in the same part of the country? So, Amar Rav Abba Bar Mamal Amar Rav Le'olam Ksavar Mecha Shlo B'fanav Havya Mecha'a. Under normal circumstances, Andrew is allowed to protest even when Rami is not present. U'mishnatenu b'shat cheirum shanu. Unless it's an emergency situation. At shat cheirum, u'mayishna Yehuda Gagalia. Why, what does it mean that in an emergency, so it matters which part of the country you're in? The Gemara says, d'nukit, why did you specify that? Ha'kamash v'lan. D'stam Yehuda v'galil k'shat cheirum damu. Because in an emergency situation, we cannot rely on the information transferring from Rami to Andrew, from Andrew to Rami. And the Gemara is telling you that living in different parts of the country is Keshat Cheirum in general, meaning people don't travel between them, and therefore Andrew won't find out about the squatting, Rami won't find out about the protest, and therefore, even if you think that Macha'a can be shlo b'fanav, it has to be shlo b'fanav in a way in which whichever information you think is critical will transfer. But if it won't, so then it's ineffective. Okay. How far did you guys get in the Gemara? You got all the way to Lamed. Okay, good. So, at this stage in the Gemara, it does seem relatively clear, at least the simple implication of this Gemara, is that Macha is central, right, rather than just sort of a detail. That seems clear. But do we have any indication yet as to why you would say Macha b'fanav or Shlo b'fanav? It doesn't say, right? Meaning, and again, we have different possibilities. One is to say that everybody agrees that fundamentally Macha is just about Rami hearing about it. Maybe it's a technical question about the effectiveness of rumors. How likely is information to transfer? Or you could say, no, everyone agrees that Macha, what gives it its force is that you're supposed to confront, and if you don't have the courage to confront, that shows that it's really Rami's land, right? But the question is, does confrontation have to be personal, or can it even be through rumors, right? It's not about the effectiveness, it's about, is it considered in your face enough to do it when you know the information's going to get there, but you don't actually do it to your face? Or you could say, one second, they actually argue about what chazaka is, right? Meaning, you could say that, no, that's exactly the point. If you say that what creates chazaka is the fact that simply that the court says, well, why were you silent? So then if Andrew was silent, well, it wasn't silent, so maybe that's enough, right? But maybe if you think it has to be b'fanav, that's because either you learn it out from Shormuad, right, that it's actually about the creation of a status, and that status must be created in person, or you think whatever, right? There's all types of directions that you could take this machlokes, and the Gemara doesn't, right? It doesn't give you too much information on that sense, right? All those possibilities are, are open. Okay, you know what? You guys didn't do section 6, did you?
No.
Okay, you know what? But maybe it's worth just taking this question up now. So let's do it together, okay? I think in order to figure out what the Gemara wants from us in this machlokes of Befanav Shelo Befanav, so we need to ask a very simple question, which is, what exactly does Befanav mean? Okay? Meaning if we want to understand the machlokes of whether or not you can have a machab shalom befanav, we got to figure out how befanav is befanav. Or how not befanav is still befanav, however you want to phrase that question. Right? So look at the Rashbam on Lamed Chet. Go back to Lamed Chet, Amud Aleph, to the second Rashbam on the Gemara. The Rashbam says, I kisavar mecha'a. If you think that the protest that Andrew says against Rami, afilu shalom b'fanav, even not in front of him. Kigon, he says, what does shalom b'fanav mean? Shishneihem darin bi'ir achat. It's where Rami and Andrew live in the same city. Umicha b'fnei shnayim in ashok, shalom b'fanav. And Rami protested in front of Rai Ginsburg and Shmuel David and said, register my displeasure with what Rami is doing, or probably Rai Wasserman, right? It's Rai Wasserman's job to deal with your infighting, right? That's his job, right? I don't know. I feel like Shmuel David and Rai Wasserman deal with, like, your dorm problems and whatever. Okay. It really doesn't matter. You protest in front of him and say, deal with my problem. Rami's in my land, okay? Like I said, logistics and stuff like that, it's not my department, so I don't care. I don't want you to protest to me. Don't tell me about it. Fine? So he says, Shamachnik, afilu hachi havi macha'a. Nevertheless, it is macha'a. Why? Dechavrech, chavrech islay. Your friend has a friend. Vishama hamachnik bedavar zeh. And the machzik, i.e. the squatter, meaning Rami, heard about it. The hayaloli he zaher bishtaro. And he should have held on to his shtar. Remember that shtar thing that became really important with the chazaka? Midlon izhar hifsit. And since he didn't hold on to his shtar, he lost out. The hilkach ktani, and therefore we learn, ad shehe imo b'medina achat. Until you're in one place, the chayim tishnei medina achat avim mecha'a af alpi she'enem bi'ir achat. Okay? So, someone tell me, based on that Rashbam, what is, according to Rashbam, the definition of bifanav and shelo bifanav? New, what does it mean? The Rashbam says, what is shelo b'fanav? When Andrew and Rami live in the same city, and Andrew protested not in front of him. And therefore, according to the Rashbam, what does b'fanav mean? Literally, b'fanav. Right? Meaning, the Rashbam defines Shelo Befanav as Andrew lives on Nachal Sneer, and Rami lives on Nachal Achula, on Emek Achula. Andrew protests to Rai Wasserman and Shmuel David. They immediately go and tell Rami, but he just didn't bother going to Rami's face. Rashbam says that still calls Shelo Bifanav. Okay? So according to Rashbam, Bifanav literally means Bifanav. Like, Pshuto Kimashmao. Bifanav means to your face. Shelo Bifanav means anything short of Andrew getting right up in Rami's face and saying, Rami, you jerk, you thief, you whatever, right? You no good, whatever. Get off my field.
One second.
It makes sense. Hold why it makes sense for 1 second. What about Rashi, on the other hand? Look at Rashi. Look at number 6. Rashi in Ketubot says, Iksavar machashol b'fanav lo havi macha'a. He says, Kigon. What does it mean, not b'fanav? Imhaya bir achat. Umichashol b'fanav b'vnei shnayim bir acheret. What does Rashi say? Shelo b'fanav means in another city, which means that the case before where Andrew protested a block away from Rami, that's considered in your face. It's not just is enough, it's considered bafanav. It's considered in your face. Right? So again, the Rashbam says in your face means literally in your face. And Rashi says, no, in your face is local versus not local. Good, Rami. Now, tell me, Rami. Rami, you said it makes sense. So now, explain the machlokes Rashi Rashbam. What? Yes, Rashbam just said, according to the Shita, the Mechal has to be the fun of, it means to be in your face. Well, this is all I want you to answer, is why would you say that in your face, Mechal Shal Bafanav means literally in your face or not literally in your face? What is that? Explain it to me. No, what are you doing? I mean, within the shita that says mecha has to be befanav, why does that mean in your face versus not literally in your face but local? Why? That's what I'm asking you.
Oh, so I guess just, you look like,
So here's I think a very simple way of understanding it. Remember, we've talked about throughout one way of understanding all these machloket about machah b'fanav, shelo b'fanav is simply that what, Andrew? The machlokot are practical. How that everyone agrees what machah is, everyone agrees what chazaka is, right? And everyone agrees that at least one factor in it is the ability of the information that Rami is squatting to give to Andrew and the ability of the information that Andrew protested to get back to Rami. That everyone agrees to that. The only question is practical. Is how likely is it for information to transfer, right? If that's how you conceptualize it, so Rashi makes a lot of sense. Because Rashi would say, look, Mefanav doesn't mean to his face. Mefanav means I'm very, 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 I need to really, really ensure the information will get to Rami. It'll get to him if I yell in his face, but it'll also get to him if I live a block from him and I tell, you know, Shmuel Dovin and Rai Wasserman, who are like responsible for making sure that everything happens, then the information gets back to Rami. So if the entire sugya here is, we agree with macha is, we agree with chazaka is, we're just trying to figure out what does it take for information to transfer, and the person who says macha has to be b'fanav just has a very high standard, right, of ensuring that the information gets to the relevant parties, so then it doesn't have to be literally in his face. It just has to be local. Yes? But if you think that what makes macha'a powerful is what, Andrew? Is that what creates all status, it's not just Rami knowing. It's the confrontation. It's Andrew, the question is, if Rami's really stealing from you, why aren't you willing to confront him? Yeah. Right? And what creates the chazaka is that Rami is willing to stay there even though he knows he could be confronted. Right? that confrontation is key to define the situation. So then, Bafanav can't just mean local. What does it need to mean? In your face. That's the whole point. Right? So that seems to be the machok is Rashi Rashbam. That Rashbam is assuming that in the end of the day, whatever is going on here, right, Rashi is assuming, look, Macha, all of this is just about is a quantitative question. How likely is it that the information will get to where it gets? It's a practical question. Some people think you have to say it to their face. Some people say not. But therefore, if it's local, so it'll definitely get there. That's all that matters. But if you think that what creates Macha, what creates Chazaka, is the confrontation or the lack thereof, so then it's plausible to say that no. Maybe there's a shita that actually requires bisfanav mamash, right? That needs Andrew to yell at Rami face to face. Rami's like smiling and imagining just getting into a fight with Andrew right now. How are you defending yourself, Rami? You're ready to defend your stake on the Kiwi farm? Okay, I if I paused it right now, I would vote that it's Andrews and Rami is a thief. Because that hesitation's like, how am I going to defend myself? That's Chazaka She'eni Matayna. I'm pretty sure that's it. But, oh, yes. Do you have the star? It's on the kiwi. What do you think? Okay, good. Now, even though we haven't seen this yet, which is I think why I left it for a little bit later, the Tosis read... Okay, you guys did read through the end of the Gemara, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fine. So I can read the Tosis read with you. The Tosis read says... actually connects this to the machloket of Bifnei Shnayim or Bifnei Shlosha. Right? This figure a little bit on Lamed Tet of whether you have to do macha in front of two or three. So he writes as follows. Look at the Tosafot read. He says, Perish, bein lemar, svirale de lo have gili milta, de mosi lemimne beudne, de machse gavatr mishalosh. Everyone agrees that it'll get there without, right? It'll get, the information will get there. V'haidam v'vnei shnayim, so of our time at the chazak v'vnei shnei inyanin echad. Why do you think you need in front of two? It goes like this. Da'ad klatshnin mizdoyer b'shtarei tvei lo mizdoyer. V'echad she'im lo ken g'divrei ha-machzik ha'yelo lo zimchot v'ashtika she'asa noteres amat lo g'divrei ha-machzik devadei machar lei ushtara ha-velei v'irchas. The Tosafot Rid says, Chazaka is created from two factors. One is Andrew. Is the fact that Andrew didn't protest is a piece of evidence that it belongs to Rami. Factor two is, after 3 years, because Rami doesn't have to hold on to his shtar anymore, so he doesn't have a counterclaim, which is, where is your star? The combination of those two factors is what gives Rami the rights to the land. Aval im chaser echad mehem, but if you miss either factor, kagon shelo hechlik shelashon, if you don't wait 3 years, aval pi shezeh shatak, even if Andrew was silent, ein a chazaka, that's not a chazaka, right? Without... Oh, she'echzik shaloshanim v'zeh lo shatak. Or, it has been 3 years, so Rami has every right to lose his star, but Andrew didn't protest. Elamicha b'vnei edim. Aval b'shlo yada machzik v'mecha'ato, ein echazaka she'en kanamat l'tanato. Now, Rami doesn't have a claim, which is, if it really was yours, why didn't you say anything? You need both factors. You need the psychological chazaka, which is created by Andrew's silence, that piece of evidence, plus Rami's excuse to not hold on to the shtar. If it's less than 3 years, So Andrew should have spoken up, but Rami should have held on to his shtar. If it's more than 3 years, so Rami shouldn't have held on to his shtar, but if Andrew had protested, then Andrew still has rights. Even if it doesn't get back to Rami. Okay. So therefore he says, I'll summarize what he says, and maybe we'll come back and read it more carefully when we actually get to Lamatet. So he says, look, if, right, this question, he says, maybe what it comes down to of 2 verses 3, meaning, if you think that Chazaka is created by the assumption that Andrew was silent, so then, in the end of the day, what does he say? You only need 2, because you just need evidence that he wasn't silent. But if you focus on I'm going to hold off on the Tosafot Rid. I'm going to hold off on the Tosafot Rid. I'm jumping the gun. We haven't seen the Gemara, so I'm jumping the gun on the Rid. Okay. But so let's just summarize then what we saw. Again, you have a machlokes Rashi Rashbam, when we say macha has to be bafanav, we mean literally in your face or not. If you think that, look, it's just about a practical question, the information get back to Rami, so then obviously, as long as we know it's going to get there, so it doesn't matter if it's in his face or not. But if you think what creates the chazaka is that confrontation or the lack thereof, so then you might think macha has to be mamash bifanaf. Okay. What we'll do then, I guess, tomorrow is we're going to keep going through the Gemara, but okay, look. I know I told you to do the whole Gemara, and I will try to address everything in Gemara, but I think, conceptually speaking, probably the best thing to do is tomorrow to focus on the sugya on Lamed Tet, Amud Bet, right, meaning jump ahead first to the question of whether it has to be done in front of 2 or 3, right, because that's really the main question, right? Does that make sense? Right, to focus on the question of 2 and 3, meaning the bottom of Lamed Tet and Aleph through Lamed Tet, yeah, let's do that tomorrow. Tomorrow, let's skip to that, right, and try to plug some of these questions in of what is Chazaka Zman Macha into the main Machlokas in the Gemara of whether it has to be Bifnei Shnayim or Bifnei Shlosha. Also deal with what I have here on number 4, the Ramban, which is there another possibility? Guys, meaning, if Rami is there, if the squatter is there, does that change the equation? Meaning, is our Gemara saying you always only need 2 or 3? Would it change if Rami was there? Maybe you'd need it even less? If we get through that, I guess we'll deal with the question of the doubtful chazaka, and then we'll try to at least quickly run through the entire Gemara and flesh it out. So tomorrow, do the Gemara in Lamed Tet. Make sure to see the Ramban and the Tosafot Rid that we just started, right? But make sure to really, really understand the Ramban and the Rid. Start with that. Maybe then do 7, which is what happens if it turns out that Rami never heard about it, even though he should have, he just didn't, right? And then maybe get into the question of Suffolk. Okay, I think so, but I'll think about if that's the right order to do it in.